storm clouds were brewing on the day Madeline Hatter was up for elimination on the Boulay Brothers' Dragula.
For over 12 years, Madeline has been one of New York's top drag queens, blowing audiences away with her outrageous looks and unbridled sexual energy. Miss Hatter flipped her lid when she found out that once again, she'd be up for extermination, but this time pelted with rotten food and ridiculed by her fellow castmates. Madeline thought it would ruin her life.
And she let everybody know it. Today, Madeline Hatter, the technicolor, psychopathic, sex clown drag queen from Dragula, joins us to share her wild stories of being on the show and why she got so upset. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Before we begin, let's listen to Madeline Hatter on Dragula, when she gets terribly upset upon finding out that she's up for elimination again.
So far in this competition, you've all faced a lot of physical challenges, but tonight you're going to face a challenge of a different nature. You will be paraded through the center of town and humiliated by your fellow competitors. While they hurl rotten food and insults at you, you must beg and plead for your life to be spared. You must convince us why you should remain here and why your opponent should be exterminated, or you'll both be leaving tonight.
Are you fucking kidding me? Kidding me? Kidding me?
I would rather go home, to be completely honest with you.
Are you okay?
This is gonna fucking destroy me. This is gonna destroy my career.
It's not. It's not.
I'm gonna be a fucking laughingstock. Are you fucking kidding me?
Madeline, you need to calm down. You need to breathe.
I said not to make a fool of me. This is what I'm talking about.
I know you're upset.
The thing is that week after week, I take ownership for the shit that, like, I fucked up, okay? I don't know if it's worth it for me to fucking keep doing this when I just keep underwhelming. You know what I mean? It is, because it's good for you guys to keep, like, having me do this thing.
I think you're concerned about being destroyed.
Fuck my persona. Like, honestly, like, this is so humiliating.
But think big picture.
Fuck the big picture, Clint. Stop it. You can't, like, make light of this.
This is what we do. This is the show.
Right.
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 Because this is real life.
I understand it's real life.
Fine, let's make some fucking good TV then.
Hello?
Hi, is this Madeline Hatter?
This is.
How are you doing, Madeline? You okay?
No, I'm fine. I'm just stuck in Chicago and it's snowing. So, like, all the flights have been, like, all messed up.
Yeah, that's, you know, not unusual for people to be stuck at O'Hare for a little while.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Don't worry, I'm sure they'll get rid of you sometime.
Here's hoping.
What made you want to get involved in Dragula? Because I've seen the past seasons, and I can handle everything except having to staple money to my thighs the elimination challenges are really designed to push your buttons.
Yeah, the exterminations, though, didn't have really any effect on me, though. Like, everybody's like, what are you scared of? And I was like, I don't know. Nothing. Really nothing. Because they try to ask you that when you're going into it. And I didn't really have any problems with any of the extermination challenges, to be completely fair.
You fear no man nor beast.
Yeah, I really don't. I don't. The whole experience kind of taught me that I'm a lot tougher than I thought I was. So It's cool. It was really, a terrible experience, but it was But I'm better for it, so.
Would you do it again?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, you had a very famous breakdown that kind of reminded me of Storm from the X-Men.
I've gotten that, and I've gotten Dark Phoenix.
Yes.
I mean, the superhero references are very, very cool.
Which is really great. You were up for elimination, And on the set, you were really angry. You were saying to them you felt that this was going to ruin your career. You responded to one of the producers, Clint, "Fuck the big picture, Clint."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said that.
You really flipped your lid.
Well, they pushed me. Mm-hmm. So I got to a point with it. We were supposed to be in these stocks or whatever. And they were supposed to be throwing food at our faces. I don't know. I don't I can deal with a lot of shit, but being publicly humiliated.
Yeah.
People take jabs at drag queens all the time. Mm. And especially in real life, people treat drag queens like we're less than in some way. Mm. Whether it be bar management or talent representation or in any other case. And I don't know, I've fought a long time for people to just give me some semblance of respect and dignity in what I do. After being in the extermination, what was it, 3 times before that? And then doing this, I just kind of hit a point with them. Yeah. And you start to question, was this the plan? Were you doing this? Are you trying to make a fool of me at this point? Are you going out of your way to fuck with me? Because if that's what you want to do, then let's be real about the situation. And that's where I had reached at that point. I knew the Boulets beforehand. I've done Dragula, the party, and I've always seen them as friends. So just on that, the way that I consider my friends, I hold them to a certain level, to a certain bar, as far as respecting our relationship. And at that point in time, I wasn't feeling like I was being respected. So
you felt like it was a big betrayal of your friendship with them.
Yeah. And I got really mad, clearly. So
we don't get to see everything. And part of it is in creating a reality TV show, sometimes people just not even being aware of the impact that certain of these requests or challenges have on people.
Totally. And the thing is let's be honest, Drag Race has not been kind to a lot of people. You know what I mean? They edited some of the girls down to look like idiots, and now they're not working. Mm. So that was what I was afraid of. Mm-hmm. Was going into this thing and being looking like such an asshole that it was not going to be, that I wasn't going to be able to show my face again. You know what I mean?
And your fear is not unfounded. I was on a reality TV show in Norway, and it was a very wholesome kind of show, but my fellow contestants were all very afraid of coming off looking like an asshole, like an idiot, like being stupid. And it was a lot of times I'm just, I said that to the producers. I said, my castmates, a lot of them are that's what they feel. And they were wondering why they felt that way. It's well, you keep asking us about what we're going to expect or what's going to happen. And, there's no way we're going to know what's going to happen. We have no idea. Mm-mm. So we're saying what we think's going to happen. And it's always 99% of the time wrong. And if that 1% of the wrong, it's wrong, you're not going to show that, you're not. Yep.
Because you're in the business of making TV.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, you're really at the mercy of the editing. Mm. And I will have to say that I am super happy with the really, quite frankly, the really boss edit they gave me. Mm. Because when I watched it, I don't feel like I came off too crazy. Mm. I mean, I came off crazy.
Well, I don't necessarily feel that way. Part of it is their emotions run high. And I've been on the set of Camp Wanakiki. And, that is the bargain basement of drag competitions. And I thought the contestants would be cool with being sent home. And even there, the Pinkening, when she was being sent home, Dominique DeGrant, she had a huge breakdown. Kevi Vida also had a huge breakdown. And my heart went out for them. But at the same time, I was like, honey,
it's part of the show.
This is just the beginning of your journey. And it's still totally not an easy thing. I don't think it's the what you had a problem was being sent home. What you had a problem with is how you were being sent home.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the time that I had gotten sent home, on that particular challenge, on that particular episode, I didn't feel, I didn't think I should have gone home, but I don't feel bad about what I presented at that point. I also didn't want to go home like first, second, third, or fourth. Like, I did not want to go home in like the lower end of things.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I don't know, like, people do hold that shit against you. And they still do.
Oh, yeah.
Like real talk, had I not had that, like breakdown, had I not had that moment where I flipped my shit on them, I don't know. I don't know how I would have been portrayed. Mm. You know what I mean?
Well, it certainly was probably one of the more memorable events of the season. And we just recently talked to the Boulay brothers, and they said that, you know, what you see on the film is like there is so much more that happened. And the thing that really struck them the most is, like, you know, they're standing there in judgment of you. You guys are all standing in front of them. The weather was fine. Then all of a sudden you start speaking about, like, this sucks. And the wind starts blowing and the clouds start getting dark. And they're like, this bitch is summoning some witchcraft up in here. So I think that's part of the reason what saved you. At least in that episode, is like maybe they were afraid they were gonna get struck by lightning.
It was like, it was crazy. I feel like I'm definitely tapped into shit with how things went, like, on set, because the first, you know, the first episode when I won the vacation, I was the first person that went up to that plate to grab the winning compact. Like, I looked right at the plate and I was like, it's that one. And I, like, fucking manifested it. It was crazy. It was crazy. And, like,
confirmation bias.
Yeah, it just was crazy. I was, like, losing my mind. And then the weather thing happened. And, like all this stuff has happened, like, happened on set where it was very witchy. And I was just like, okay, cool. So
what has the public reaction been to you from that incident? How have people responded to it?
Well, the t-shirts are selling.
Well, awesome. And where does one get one?
Yeah, theonlymad.com.
Theonlymad.com.
Yeah. Yep. shameless plugging of my merchandise.
Listen, there is nothing, no shame in letting people know that you're awesome and that you need money, help, love, and appreciation.
Because she definitely paid for all this shit all herself, let me tell you, girl.
You don't have a sugar daddy?
No, I wish I had a sugar daddy. If I had a sugar daddy.
Because you could get a sugar daddy if you wanted to.
I don't know. I'm 37, girl.
But you're not that kind of girl.
Oh, no, I'm definitely that kind of girl. I am definitely that kind of girl.
Well, you're very sexual in your performances. And I've read in past interviews that... you don't want your parents to see it, even though they love you.
No, my dad wants to come to my shows, and I'm like, Dad, you can't come to my shows.
Like, what do you mean sexual? Are you, like, putting stuff up your butthole, or, like, what's going on there?
I mean, I've definitely sucked dick on stage, but, like...
Hot?
Yeah, and it was really big, too.
Oh,
I gotta get in drag now.
Have you ever been to Black Party? It was at Black Party.
I have not, but I heard about the infamous when somebody took a shit on the dance floor years ago. Every time I hear about that, I think about that.
that was gross. I was the Black Party queen for, like, 5 years running, and it's just, like, yeah, it's wild. But anyhow, I don't know. I dance like a hooker. You know what I mean? Like, I dance like a stripper, and, like, that's, like, I'm very provocative with a lot of my stuff. So it's not very family friendly. So it's always kind of weird when I run into kids. Like, if I do, like, family events, and my kids are like, pretty. And I'm like,
Drag Queen Story Hour now with cocks.
Yeah, exactly. Give them a reason to, like, protest and picket us, you know?
Oh, God. Well, that's a great thing about someone like you is that you're keeping true to drag's subversive and countercultural roots. And to me, I love working with children. I love working with people of all ages. But, you know, there's something to be said about keeping that anarchistic, that rebellious spirit alive.
Yeah. No, I feel like it's really important. Like, some people are doing drag for drag, for the sake of doing drag. Like, it's like, okay, I'm going to be pretty and I'm going to, like, do this. I'm going to lip sync this song. And then there's people that are doing it because it's like, there's a meaning to this. There's a very deeper, like, a much deeper, like, political meaning to all of this. And we have to keep pushing for that. Like, there needs to be a message being sent out that, like, equality is a thing.
Mm.
that this art form in particular is like a constant standing up for like what's right, for like who we are as people and human rights, you know, like this, that's what drag is inherently and what it should stand for.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people like you. For the past 15 years, our microphones, hard drives, mixers, and cables have fearlessly been recording podcasts with thousands of legendary LGBTQ artists. Right now, we need your help to save Feast of Fun. Two of our microphones are broken, our equipment and our website have had it, and are in urgent need of repairs in order to continue. Plus, we'd like to bring back our special forums for listeners and guests of the show, a truly fun place to chat without fear of having their privacy compromised or exposing themselves to Facebook. This holiday season, please consider stuffing your stocking with Feast of Fun. Go to gofundme.com/savefeastoffun and pledge any amount today. Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about transphobia and sexism in drag culture?
I think it's silly. I don't know why it exists, considering the most talented, like, I don't know, the lovely and beautiful women that I grew up seeing, like, at Parliament House. Mm-hmm. You know, like all the Footlight girls,
mm-hmm.
like, holy shit. You know what I mean? Like those girls are like everything. Like they're the bar, you know, like that's what you want to do. And like, they're like just living their best lives as women, like doing their thing. And they just look like goddesses, like real life goddesses in real life. And so transphobia to me is like in the drag culture, in the drag scene, is just bizarre to me, considering they're the ones that built drag from the ground up, you know? And
one of the things, like, you know, when people to ask me about bio queens, I say we're all biological and we're all queens. You know,
yeah.
there is not a yes. distinction, and you know, cisgendered mm-hmm. or assigned female at birth drag entertainers have always been a part of our culture. I mean, look at Minx Stoll and Elvira mm-hmm. and so on, you know.
My drag daughter, Blue, I have three kids in New York, Zavaleta, Virginia Thick, and Blue. And Blue is AFAB. She's this incredible performer, and she's absolutely stunning, and she's an ASAP queen. And, you know, truth be told, like my experience with ASAP queens, ASAP performers was limited to maybe like two or three girls in New York. It wasn't a big scene, you know,
mm-hmm.
but all of the ASAP girls have come to like work with me in some capacity. Like now, you know, we have Sadie Bedbug, Rah Rah Darling, God Complex, and like all these incredible AFAB queens in New York City. And it's just getting bigger and bigger. And quite honestly, I don't know why people are getting, I find that like contention with AFAB performers comes from a place of insecurity. To be honest, I think most of that does. So I don't really pay much attention to it. All I can understand is that they're stunning and they have something to provide. And they're also more oftentimes than not the first to speak their mind, which is also something that people have a lot of problem with.
You responded really favorably to a recent interview with Jinx Monsoon, where she talked about how too often the relationship between promoters or organizers of drag events tends to be dysfunctional, where they treat the artists as if they're working for them, when in reality, the artists are the ones who are hiring the managers or producers to showcase their talents.
Yeah.
I've hired a lot of people who treat me as their boss, you know, so, you know, it's, you know what I'm saying?
Are we talking about the nature of show business or a problem that needs to be addressed?
See, now I just had to stand up and start walking away because I know I'm going to speak very passionately about this.
Get it.
It's like, it's really this, like, it comes from people seeing femininity as a weakness or as a less than sensibility, that like somehow masculinity means that it's better than, stronger than, more capable than, and it's simply just not a fact. This toxic masculinity that men are the ones that are supposed to be in charge, or masculine presenting people are supposed to be the ones in charge, that they're the alphas and that they're the ones that are more capable than, is just so absurd. I can't begin to tell you. That's why like I was reacting to what Jinx was saying, was because she literally point blank said that like femme presenting people are, there's just a huge misogyny that's like portrayed in within queer culture, that like drag queens or anybody that is feminine cannot do things as well as someone who is more masculine. And so we have these people that are running these businesses that present as masculine, that are present as, you know, cis, whatever. And they think that they can, that they, because they have all of the, I don't know, right mannerisms. It's just so bizarre that they think that they can control an industry that's built on the backs of femme-presenting individuals. You know what I mean?
Isn't it also a class issue, too? I mean, a lot of the presenters are very well off financially, and they're sort of doing this, in some ways, just they're in it for the money.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot, in which most of that money doesn't even come to us, you know? Mm-hmm. And reality, it wouldn't exist without us in any capacity. And that's what Jinx was getting to. And the fact that she said it, like, I was like screaming at my computer screen. Like, I was like, yes, yes, someone is saying it. And like, I deal with that shit in New York all the time.
So is the solution to all this is to push for drag queens to organize their own events and shows, and to support only media that's owned and run by drag queens like Dragula or this program?
I think what needs to happen is people need to start understanding that the people with the experience, like the actual experience, not like this, like artists that know the business, like drag queens know how to run a show, how to run a business, because we are essentially businesswomen, because we're constantly looking out for ourselves. So we know how to take care of other artists. If you keep your talent happy, everybody's going to be banging down your door to work for you. For me, I was just presented with investors and they want to give me a butt ton of money to open my own space in New York. That's something that I'm really looking into quite aggressively. And I'm having meetings in the next couple of weeks. In these scenarios, that's what we need to do. Like, there needs to be more queer owned and operated businesses. One, it should be queer. I'm sorry. I just don't know if straight owners or straight business people have any right to say what happens in our community.
Well, they're not as invested in our success as we would be, because we're part of that community. But also I would argue too, it's not good enough just to be queer. It's the news organizations, journalism has to come from a place, politicians has to come from a place of community and of history. Mm-hmm. And I see too many of these, we call these verticals. In the news world, a lot of LGBT news media has gone from being community organized and historically based to becoming something from a corporation that sucks money out of our own community.
And that's the thing, is there's these business people coming in and doing exactly that. Mm. They're making it more about money, more about business, and not about the welfare and the treatment of people. And that's in it's happening all the time, where it's taken from the little person and then blown up and turned into this machine. And it doesn't always have to be that. Like, that doesn't need to be the end result of things. And for some reason, that's just where our society is. I mean, we are a capitalist society, so.
Well, right now, it just seems like a lot of the drag queens and their managers, that I've heard of, different companies are in litigation with each other, and mm-hmm. and there's a lot of betrayal, a lot of exploitation, a lot of poor contracts, and mm-hmm. you know, like drag talent are being asked to sign contracts that are against their own best interests, keeping them from talking to news media, keeping them from doing projects that are not in the service of the management company. And part of me is like, you know, to some degree, I was like, always get a second opinion whenever you sign a contract from somebody. And if it's telling you to do some weird shit, don't sign it. You can also scratch it off.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm doing all of my bookings myself. I'm representing myself. I'm the only one that's taking care of things for me. Because to be honest, I want the money.
It's you know what Madonna, says in her tour? An artist who knows the truth is a dangerous element.
Yeah.
And people who are in power punish them and are not trusting them because of that situation.
She opens Madame X to her with that, and it's a quote from James Baldwin.
Yeah.
Here's the full quote. Art is here to prove that all safety is an illusion. The crime that you discover you are guilty of is not so much that you are aware, but that other people see that you are aware and cannot bear to watch it. Because it testifies to the fact that you're bearing witness to something which everyone knows and nobody wants to face. Everybody's hurt. Artists are here to disturb the peace.
Yeah. I mean, it's so accurate and so true, because artists are the smartest people in the world. Point blank, period. We see more, we take in more, we know what's going on in the world. We're real to it. And artists refuse to just swallow the bullshit that's shoved down their throats.
Carrie Fisher said, when you have a broken heart, make art.
That's it. Comes from a real place.
We got some really great questions from our listeners and our friends and fans on social media.
We have a great audience.
These are good people.
The people that listen to our show and support our show are just wonderful people. So trust that it's not going to be.
So this one comes here by Ziggy. Hi, Madeline. I appreciate and love your sense of humor. You remind me of a time when drag queens were all unapologetically mean. Do you think drag queens have become too nice? Also, how many drag daughters do you have?
Well, there's Victoria and Opulence. And then I have the three, so five.
So do you think drag queens have become too nice?
Yes. I think people are scared of the fandom. I think it's a shame. I think that when you get to a certain point, like, you kind of have to, like, Disney-fy it and become more digestible for people if you want to continue to be more and more popular. But I don't know. I don't think I'll ever feel comfortable being more digestible for people.
Well, and part of it is you have a vision and you're speaking to that vision. It's not like whether... You're asking and inviting to be seen and to be loved and appreciated, but at the same time, it is a message that you're sending out to the world.
And I also like it's more about aesthetics and giving feelings rather than asking for permission to do something. You know what I mean? I'm not looking for anybody else's validation. Like, you're invited into my world when I'm performing. That's just how I feel about it.
David Hernandez, if Dracula was a Survivor type show from your season, who would you have formed an alliance with, and who would you have stabbed in the back to make it to the top?
Jeez. Well, I don't really stab people in the back. That's not what I do. But if I were to align myself with anybody, probably Priscilla. I love her.
Priscilla's great. She and Dahlia bumped heads a lot this season, didn't they?
Yeah. We all bumped heads. We all did.
What do you think the primary friction was about?
A lot of stuff. There was a lot of like negative feelings developed off camera. We'll just say.
But I mean, in terms of your feelings towards each other, do you feel like it was a situation where you guys were all sort of fighting for attention, or you felt like you were not being understood?
I was very well understood. When I spoke, everyone listened. But and if someone tried to talk over me, I'd tell them to shut up. But like I feel like everyone on cast had a pretty hard time being able to like speak in groups. Does that make sense? I think that like it was hard for them to conduct or say a statement in a group setting. It was like really difficult for them.
The times I've been in that kind of situation, it's like it's hard to give attention to somebody else because part of it is that when you're giving attention to somebody else, you're not receiving it. And not receiving that attention means that you're likely to get eliminated.
Yeah, totally. I remember like the last day that I was on, I didn't say much that day. Like that episode, I didn't really say a whole lot. I had like reached a place with all of them. Because you have to stay with them the entire time and you're around those people all day, every day. And I just had hit a point. So I think that might have had something to do with it, too.
Mechanical Morning wants to know, who have been your biggest influences?
My biggest influences? I would probably say in my earlier days, Nina Flowers.
Oh, yes, loca.
Yeah, she was just... she just still is. I mean, you see her on the last... one of the finales, she came in looking better than everybody.
Oh, yeah. Like, she's oh my got the God. Looks.
She's really just everything.
And the DJ talent.
Oh, my God. Incredible. Incredible.
If you don't know who she is, folks, Google her.
That's so bizarre to me. Like, I don't know anybody who doesn't know who Nina Flowers
Mark
is.
Mark's like, reference to when she was on All Stars with Tammy Brown, and they were doing paying tribute to La Lupe, and all the judges and RuPaul were like, who the hell is La Lupe? And her response was like, you don't know who La Lupe is? Google her. Google it, Loca.
So we always just say that to each other. You don't know who she is? Okay. Google her.
Google her.
La Lupe was a Puerto Rican singer, right?
She's a very famous Latinx singer. Mm-hmm. She's kind of she's the Chavela Monsoon of... you don't know who Chavela Monsoon is? Google her.
No, Google her.
There's nobody by that name. I'm talking about Chavela Vargas. The Iron Goat. How has the drag scene in Brooklyn changed in those years since you started doing drag?
In Brooklyn? I mean, Brooklyn's always been really fierce. I think it's just gotten more so. I don't know if it's necessarily changed. There's just been more venues have opened. There's more opportunities. I think that Brooklyn-based drag is being respected for its artistry more and more. It's just gotten bigger.
Fashion Fencing says season 3 got boring after you left. What would you do differently if you could do it all over again?
I wouldn't concern myself with how everyone else is doing. I was very helpful to everyone. I was very helpful. I shouldn't have been. I should have been more selfish while I was there. And
because you felt like your generosity was taken advantage of?
Unwittingly, yeah. But I also allowed it to happen. You know, I have a hard time saying no. And I like taking care of people and making sure that everybody's fine. That's why I'm a mom. I like to take care of people. And that was my downfall, I feel.
Queer people are the middle children of society. We want to be liked and loved by everybody we meet. And sometimes when we run into somebody who doesn't understand us or doesn't want to like us, we irrationally go after them to want to be loved, which usually makes things worse.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, in the 12 years, you've been doing drag for quite some time now, right? Over 12 years? Have you become more comfortable in dealing with people who don't value you as a person? Where you're just at peace with that?
Like, you know, like being on stage and like being, you're kind of like just like a bullseye, you know, essentially when you're up in front of people publicly. So when you're doing that, you essentially have to take the good and the bad. You have no choice.
You got the facts of life.
Right. That's it. And that's it. And like, I've made peace with that. I know that people don't like me. People don't like me every day. And it's like, that's okay. you don't have to like me because I probably won't even remember who you are the minute I walk away from you. You know what I mean? It's not.
Well, if we all had to like each other, that would be fascism.
Right.
You know, right. I don't want everybody to feel like they have to like me. Mm-hmm. I just want everybody to be respectful and peaceful and compassionate.
But also, too, the best people in the world really are the bitches. They're the ones that are telling you, this is fucked up. This needs to change. This isn't right.
See,
it's the nice people that sided with the Nazis. They're just like, well, you know, they have a point. You know, that kind of
stuff. And that's the thing. And the complacent is what got Trump in office. Mm. So that's the fact. Mm-hmm. Is that like, and I don't think telling this, so this is a problem. Everybody thinks that I'm mean or that I'm a bitch. I'm sorry that I'm honest, and I'm sorry that I tell you what the real situation is. Like, I'm going to tell you exactly what's going on. I'm not going to manipulate you. I'm not going to do any of that. I'm just going to tell you what's happening. I don't think that makes me a bitch. Mm. If anything, I'm doing the right thing by you, by being real and not wasting any of your fucking time.
Well, I think some of that comes also too from, because you're from Massachusetts originally, and I think people from the East Coast have a you know, New York, Massachusetts, that area, they're tell it like it is kind of people, whereas like, you know, Southerners, Midwesterners, it's like we kind of just want to get along, we want to make things nice, we want a nice veneer.
So annoying.
Mm.
Bless your heart, darling.
Yeah, gross. Don't do that shit. Like, don't dance around it. Like, that's such a waste of time. Don't you want to, like, get to where you're going? Like, by dilly-dallying and dancing around a topic, you can't move on to the next one. No.
Wolfie Boy 44 wants to know, did Dragula change the way you do your drag?
No, it didn't.
Did it change you in any way?
No, it made me a stronger artist. I learned a lot about materials and things like that. I also learned a lot about myself. But did it change how I do drag? No.
Louisiana Purchase told me that it was like going back to art school.
Yeah.
You know.
It was very that. It was like an artist intensive case study mental mindfuck.
Because that's kind of like you're also, besides being well known as a drag queen, you're also really, really well known as a photographer who specializes in photographing drag artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done a lot of really great girls. I was even blessed to like take Raven's photo. That was Mike. I almost threw up on myself when that day happened.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Raven.
I mean, the best makeup out there ever, right? Everybody's imitated her look. And I, you know, I mean, I loved Matthew Anderson's look on RuPaul, but I got to tell you, I feel like Ru's never looked better since Raven's taken over the makeup.
Really?
I think so. I mean,
let's just say this. What? Matthew Anderson invented the look.
Yes.
Raven refined it.
Yes. And I mean, Ru just looks stunning. I mean, she looked good with Matthew Anderson. She looked fantastic, but I really feel like, you know, Raven's at that level, if not more.
That's interesting to hear.
Do you not agree?
I don't not necessarily not agree. I don't have an opinion on that per se, just because I feel like each artist,
it's subjective. You're right. We're not here to judge your drag or your makeup skills.
But God, this triggered, test, triggered.
Listen, I'm just saying, and I shouldn't. And it is terrible. I hate comparing people, and I shouldn't have done it. I apologize. Let me just say that Matthew Anderson's makeup skills are fantastic and made Ru's look.
Yeah,
and
it's like comparing Leonardo and Michelangelo. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you can't really.
Matthew Anderson, if without Matthew Anderson, there would be no RuPaul, there would be no Raven, there would be no RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
We would all be looking like Lady Bunny in the 80s.
Oh, God, don't ever say that.
There was this photo of Lady Bunny in this book, and she wasn't tucking.
She was not tucking, and she was meaty down there, which shocked me. And she was also thin.
That's even more shocking.
Stop.
And she was uncredited.
Lady Bunny was beautiful back in the day. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought she looked great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was roommates with RuPaul. And I always ask Bunny, like, did you guys ever, you know, fuck?
No, you didn't.
Yes, of course I do. Buddy's a close friend of mine.
Well, she's always like, RuPaul was a very, very attractive young man. She goes on about how attractive and handsome he was when they were younger in Atlanta and New York.
Bunny denies it, but I think that
she sucked him off.
And some night, some cold night, they snuggled in bed together.
I think you should write a fan fiction.
You know, that's the thing is, like, this is a weird phenomena is slash fiction, erotic fiction with drag entertainers as the stars.
It's really gross.
Sister Dick makes you sick?
Yeah, I'm no Kai Kai for Maddie.
Well, the Boulay brothers are a Kai Kai couple, and so is Louisiana and Boulay Man Rhapsody.
Good for them.
Mark and I are the Sugar Baker twins.
Okay, well, I'm not speaking for you. I'm speaking for me.
The Sugar Baker twins are not having sex with each other.
So Mask Only is on your Grindr profile?
I actually don't have a Grindr profile. I have a Scruff profile. Thank you. Thank you.
Girl, I just had to get off of those things. It was like, I was opening myself to so much sexual harassment, and I was just like, you know, I just couldn't take it anymore.
See, I don't know. I don't ever hook up with anybody. It's just there for like a boost of like confidence. That's it.
But it is this kind of dysfunctional relationship with it, right? Because it's like, tell me I'm pretty. And you're just like, you know, I need to find self-worth and beauty from within.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely not. Those apps are not good for anyone. I think that it's text messaging and the cell phone apps, like, honestly, I think are leading to a major breakdown in human interaction. And I think that's why a lot of people are single and a lot of people don't know how to interact with one another anymore.
Do you think cell phones are ruining drag shows? A lot of venues are starting to ban audiences from pulling out their phones during a performance.
I think that people that appreciate drag are finding ways to use them well, like, to, like, for the people that they really enjoy, they're able to promote them on their Instagram feed and stuff like that. I love Instagram. I think Instagram is fun as fuck because it's like just showing art. Like, it's not like, yes, you can express an opinion, but it's mostly just picture driven. Mm-hmm.
And it's forcing people to make art too in some ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And like how you edit a video to put on Instagram and like stuff like that. Like, I think it's gotten really creative and I really, really like it a lot. Whereas like Facebook is just toxic. Facebook is just a sounding board for awful, awful dribble.
Seeing Zuckerberg being in bed with all these fascist Republicans is really gross. Disheartening, you know?
It's really gross.
And part of it, we kind of, you remember the motherboards, the drag forums that used to be all the drag queens in New York City? I don't know if you were then misunderstood and Head of Lettuce.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They were all really active in that in back in the day. And this was before MySpace even.
The early, late 90s, early 2000s.
And
right?
I kind of want to like see if we can do a run of it and just have forums that are not tied to a corporation, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that would be really lovely. It's really hard right now because everything feels like it's tied to something.
Yeah.
Even like just everything. Like now we're like food, like even down to food, like Chick-fil-A and like all that mess. And it's just everybody's like doing their background checks on everybody now, which is good. That's a good thing because people now know where they're sending their money.
Are you mad that you can't eat at Chick-fil-A anymore, like Peppermint likes to brag about?
Oh, girl, I like Popeyes. I'm a Popeyes girl.
Did you get to taste the chicken sandwich?
No, I don't know what's going on. Are people really freaking out about a chicken sandwich?
Well, now it's so viral that now Kentucky Fried Chicken is selling donuts and chicken tenders. And I'm like fully convinced they want us all to die with a smile on our face.
I don't even know what to say.
It's wild, you know, like people have lose their shit over a goddamn chicken sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are people like rioting? I don't understand.
Have you seen the videos of people like when the Popeyes was out of the sandwich, that people were literally having fist fights over it?
That's ridiculous.
It's easier to get mad about a chicken sandwich than to get mad about systemic injustice and inequality. Yeah.
I would rather get mad at systemic injustice. That's something I care about.
In terms of photography, before we wrap up, I really love that very few drag queens that I know of are so intertwined and mix the two mediums so intimately as you do with photography and drag. And I wonder, do you sometimes develop a look because you think it's going to photograph well, or do you continue that look afterwards in photo retouching?
It depends on the concept. It depends on whether or not I'm going to be using it for something in particular. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be shooting my devil look if I ever fucking get home. And I have
if you need a place to spend the night tonight, you're welcome to stay.
Listen,
here.
Listen, crash over here, honey. You know who we are.
It might have to happen at this point. Like, if it gets pushed back again, I'm calling you guys and I'm going to get another flight.
Okay. Come on down. We'll do a off camera cookie with drag queens.
Oh my God, I would love that. I love food so much.
Listen, next time you're in town, let's do something.
I want to do a full on Chicago invasion. So
invade us, honey. We're ready for it.
We're yours to be conquered.
Oh, the drag photography thing. If it's for graphic design, it's about the format of the photo. I just took a picture for Are You Fucking Kidding Me? And it's just me screaming with my tongue out. It's going to be a whole graphic for my t-shirt and my mug and for this art mat thing that I'm designing and putting together for the website. And it comes down to what it's being used for. When it's the portraiture, it's I did Roxy Andrews and then she took it and did sublimation t-shirts of it for drag queen merch, you know? Mm. So it's it all serves a function. That's why, that was really why I got into photography, and I'm self-taught. I didn't even go to school for it. I just really like Photoshop and I like retouching because it's like makeup. It's digital makeup. You know what I mean?
Amen, honey. If without Photoshop, I'd be a booger queen. Out of drag, I wear more makeup than most drag queens. And people are always shocked when they see me in person. They're like, holy shit.
Bitch, she's B.
Always be camera ready.
That's yes, right. Girl.
ABC.
Always.
Madeline, it's so good talking to you. I really love getting to know you better. You know, it's like sometimes I feel like the reality TV show experience is just scratching the surface into this really rich mind and culture and talent that you are.
But you really did add so much to season 3 of Dragula, you know?
Thank you. It was an awful experience, but I'm glad to have done it. If there's an All-Stars, babe,
Well, you're all been killed, so it's the zombies come back from the dead, huh?
Yeah.
You have to pick your head up off the floor and get back to work.
Yeah, that's what WPIR Giggles says.
They never gave me my wig back.
Because they put it on the fake head?
Yeah, and then they threw it. They threw my hair. They're like, can we have your wig? And I was like, no. No. It's two. It's two wigs. And they're like, but we need it. And I'm like, fine. Ian, no. He's like, Madeline, give me the hair. I'm like, fine. I was like, am I getting it back? And he's like, yes. I'm like, I'm not getting it back, am I? He's like, you'll get it back. And I was like, you asshole. And I never got it back.
Well,
couldn't they give you the two pieces back?
I know.
You could sew it back together like Frankenstein.
No, well, girl, you know, my side hustle is hair, so I can fix any wig. But it was two really lovely, beautiful red wigs, and I was like, I was really looking forward to like making it super huge and like doing all this stuff for when I got home. Anyway, I'm just like, I'm digressing.
You know what we want to do? We want to do is let's make some edible wigs out of food.
Okay.
And you're, I know that sounds crazy, but Rice Krispie Treats and caramel popcorn shape really, really well into wigs. And then you go into the club and everyone eats you alive.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Okay.
Let's do it.
I could do that. Let's do it.
Okay.
Are we going to go out in them?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
I mean, after we're done filming.
Yeah. I want to make a finger wave out of one.
Ooh.
That would be pretty.
Eat my finger wave, bitch.
Well, the way you do it is that you build a frame out of foil. And then you attach because the heat of your head, and if you're in a place that's relatively warm, is going to start melting the whole thing. So you really gotta move it. It's one of those like you wear and go, you know, it's a runway thing.
Yeah. You hit it.
It's not a nightclub thing. It's a wear it. Take the picture, and then it's going to fall apart.
Okay. Oh, man. All right. I want to
know. Now, if you want to make it with, like, shellac that's not edible.
No. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to get hungry.
Well, honey, I always have something to feed you.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks so much, Madeline.
Bye, Madeline.
Absolutely. Bye. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Madeline Hatter lives in New York City. You can check it out at theonlymad.com. The extra D is for delicious.
What's the extra N for?
For necrophilia.
I was sad to see her lose her head on.
Spoiler alert.
I'm sorry.
If you haven't seen it yet, but check it out. Dragula season 3 is available on Netflix.
Only on Netflix.
Only on Netflix. You don't have to sit through ads anymore. Thank God. But we're glad that you guys sit through ads on the show like this one. Remember, Feast of Fun is made possible because of the generous support of fabulous people like you. Listen to thousands of interviews with the Boulay brothers, many of the contestants from Dragula, Disasterina! Disasterina!
Her episode of Cooking with Drag Queens is coming up soon.
Yeah, and you can check out teasers. And much more at feastoffun.com/plus. And if you become a Patreon supporter, you can watch episodes before they happen at patreon.com/feastoffun.
And don't forget to visit our store, feastoffun.com/store, and get your Not Shaving Gives Me More Time for Misbehaving t-shirts.
That's right, honey. Let your freak flag fly freely. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.